You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
This is the Roto Experts! Alongside Wall Street, Matt Modica, and the King, Scott Angle. I am Greg Sussman. This is a Sussmania Monday, because I will not be leaving this exact chair for the next 6 hours. Let's go, baby. Let's do it strong.
Marathon man. Look at you.
That's what I'm here for, man. That's exactly what I'm here for, to bring the people some entertainment, some fantasy advice, and whatever else I bring. So there you go. What's going on, Matt?
I'm feeling strong today. It was a very good weekend. Unfortunately, there's 3 more weeks of the regular season in the NFFC. So we're going to try and keep the tide going. I've kind of been growing a playoff beard pre-playoffs.
Really?
But it could be shaved anytime. I'm really not a beard kind of guy.
I think Matt's just telling us he hasn't shaved in a while, and that's about it.
Pretty much.
Scotty, what's going on?
Good to see you guys. It was a tough Sunday, in terms of some disappointing fantasy results. And although you guys are not a fan of The Walking Dead, maybe the most upsetting episode of all time in a lot of viewers' eyes. I'll just say the listeners will understand this, those who watch the show, and there are a lot of them. It was a tough week for a guy named Ezekiel.
It's interesting you say that. I mean, Jake was saying just how terrible the episode was. Now, would you say it was terrible?
For what happened in it. Oh. It was a very good episode.
Oh, no, Jake said it was absolutely awful.
It was awful because it was very, very depressing at one point.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I think Jake actually went in a different direction with how awful it was.
Yeah, but Jake, usually likes to go away from the pack. So.
He said, quote, "The season of The Walking Dead may be the worst yet."
I think he's probably just very depressed by it. I thought it was a great episode.
Was you watching The Walking Dead or The Cowboys yesterday?
Oh boy!
Who did they miss more, Elliot or Tyrone Smith?
I think it was Smith. Because at least they had to abandon the run at some points in the first half. But Morris was running well in the second half. That first drive of the second half, they livened up with the run. He had 34 yards on two runs and was breaking tackles, etc. So I really think it was the offensive line.
Yeah, we get into Ezekiel Elliott's absence and what that did for Dak Prescott coming up really just following the break. And you're right. I think that's a big question you have to ask. Was it Tyron Smith? Was it Ezekiel Elliott? And we have to take a look at the running backs. No snap count game ready for later this week. We're going to get right into it on the other side of the break. What we saw, what we thought going forward, what we could try to project, because that's ultimately the goal here, is to try to project going forward. And I think that question remains for Dak Prescott. That question remains for all the running backs in Dallas. And that is where we will begin this Monday edition of the Roto Experts. When we come back, Matt Modica, Scott Angle, and Greg Sussman here with you for the next 3 hours. Let's do it live, brother. We'll be back right after this.
Playing daily fantasy basketball this year? Consider Daily Roto your go-to resource. Whether you play on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. With a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, there's no better place to get your NBA DFS content. Better yet, you can save 10% using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium and learn more about our awesome product.
Back here with you, Roto Experts, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Gentlemen, we speculated for literally 4, maybe even 5 months on how this Ezekiel Elliott thing would play out. A lot of love for Dak Prescott, a lot of love for Darren McFadden, and a lot of wrong answers going in to the first game without Ezekiel Elliott for the Dallas Cowboys. Again, they lost 27-7 down in the A-Town for Corey Parson to watch in person, which is why he's not here today. Not a great game for Corey to go to.
No. He picked the wrong week to show up. I mean, look, I thought that it was an uphill battle for the Cowboys this week. The Falcons were had their backs against the wall. It was a home game that they it was pretty much a must win for them to make the playoffs and stuff and get back on track in the NFC. And, you know, it worked out for them. Look, the Cowboys not having Elliott, not having Tyron Smith, they were severely shorthanded.
They were severely shorthanded, and you actually did call this. That listen, this is a very, very tough game for them. When Corey was like, that was the whole response.
Corey thought they were going to go undefeated.
Yes, he did. And it was a very tough game for them to win. They actually liked Dallas in the game, to be honest with you. But I mean, they got smacked, and Atlanta came out, played really well. There's a lot to talk about from the Atlanta side, which we're going to get to in a second. But let's start with Dallas here, Scott. The question that Matt posed before the break: Tyron Smith or Ezekiel Elliott? I think it's a question that I don't want to gloss over because it is a big deal. It does matter that Dak Prescott had his worst game of his career thus far. I mean, it hasn't been a long career, but of his short career, throwing for just 176 yards. Yes, he rushed for 42 and a touchdown, but he also lost two fumbles. He didn't look good. And I have to ask, do you believe that without Ezekiel Elliott, the defense did not have to key in on the run game? Or was it the fact that he didn't have his left tackle?
I think it was more on the offensive line because
eight sacks.
The 8 sacks were the most that they had given up since 1991. And Troy Aikman actually remembered that game against the Eagles.
Shocking, he actually remembered it.
Reggie White and Jerome Brown, et cetera. I think it was an 11-sack outing he was talking about. I think it was clearly the offensive line. Now, Dak Prescott has had a very nice year and a half, but without the offensive balance there, he was basically put into a position there. But I don't know if it's so much missing Ezekiel Elliott because, you know, at one point when the Cowboys really tried to go to Alfred Morris in the second half and stay in the game early, you know, they ran the ball well. He had 2 straight carries for 34 yards. There was a lot. It was the offensive line. And once again, you're losing Sean Lee on defense. This guy cannot stay healthy. And when Sean Lee goes down, this goes from a okay defense to awful. And you see the downgrade because he really like holds up a lot, you know, in that linebacking crew, and the secondary is still burnable regardless of what they do in the front seven. So I think they lost two. I think it was a domino effect. I think if they wanted to run the ball, they could, but they were just in too many adverse situations, like, immediately.
Well, I mean, look at Elliott. He's gotten better and better as this year has gone on. I remember early in the season versus Arizona, I was seeing on Twitter last season he would have took it to the house. But over the last few weeks, he's been pretty dominant. And I've heard the argument also on Twitter, should they have drafted Jalen Ramsey over Ezekiel Elliott? Elliott's an elite talent. And let's not get that wrong. But when you don't have the protection and stuff, I mean, at some point, somebody, you got to like double team Adrian Claiborne. You got 6 sacks. That was pretty insane. A hell of a game by him. But it was a tough spot for Dallas, and being shorthanded, it was, you know, the perfect storm. Things looked good early on. I think Dak, if he does come back next week, Smith, I think the Cowboys can be competitive against the Eagles. I think the Eagles are opening up as a 3.5-point favorite in Dallas.
Yeah, and you know what they got to do? They have to feed Alfred Morris and let him get in a rhythm to take some pressure off the passing game. And Dallas can do that. Alfred Morris ran well at some points yesterday. It's just, you know, to Matt's point, no matter whether it was 3rd or 11 or 3rd and 3, you know, the pass protection was absolutely horrible. It was just terrible. And to Matt's point, they never adjusted. They never put out a tight end or a running back, you know, to chip on Adrian Claiborne or anything. They didn't adjust. So that's on the coaching staff too.
So let's talk about the running game here for a moment. And I don't want to get to Philly quite yet because that seems a week away or so. But Scott, you pointed out that when they tried to feed Ezekiel, when they tried to feed Alfred Morris the ball, they were going places, and it was a little bit more effective. 11 carries, 53 yards, an average of 4.8 yards a carry for Alfred Morris on the day. But he didn't lead the team in snaps. And a lot of this probably is game flow. But significantly, it was Rod Smith that was ahead in Dallas Cowboys snaps on the day. As it was, Alfred Morris had 21 snaps compared to Rod Smith's 39. There's an 18-snap difference. Darren McFadden, I want to get to him in one moment, was on the field for one play. So, how do you look at those three numbers, Scott?
I think things fell apart quite early for them. You know, after they were behind 10-7, the defense, was getting lit up, and the offensive line was just the left side was terrible. And when they went into a passing set, they had to have Rod Smith out there. You know, he seems to be the guy they prefer as a pass catching back over Darren McFadden. So that's why I think they outsnapped him. Morris didn't get off early, 6 carries to 8 yards, but they realized after halftime that maybe we need to establish a run, and he ran well, but by then, just after that drive, it was too late. I think the Cowboys will probably have to come out in their next game against Philadelphia and establish the run early to avoid this sort of disaster, because if Sean Lee is not playing next week, that defense does not have any prayer at all against the Philadelphia Eagles, and they'd be up against it. I know you don't want to get too far ahead,
yep.
But you know, it just naturally you go there because of the game flow and what you saw yesterday.
All right, so if that's the case, and you think they don't give this team a chance, then you're saying Rod Smith's the guy that you want going forward, then. That's
no,
the question.
I'm not saying that. To answer your question,
yes.
I think it's going to be a combination of the two, because they're going to try to establish Morris, because you want to play. I would think they want to play to establish some of the ball control that they were able to when Ezekiel Elliott was there, and Morris is maybe the best fit. But if they continue to fall behind, then Rod Smith is going to get a lot of snaps. But you know, so. It's going to be hard to read. It depends on the game flow, but I still want Morris.
Well, Scotty Circles, I'm going to go with I want Rod Smith. I think, you know, it's. I'm not saying he's going to be the guy, but I'm going to take a shot on the pass-catching back always. Mm-hmm. He's young, and there was some little slight whispers and rumors about him prior to this game, the beat writers in Dallas. He's more of the unknown. We always liked the unknown.
Sure.
And I want to see the upside he has. Look, if Dallas' defense, you know, without Lee, we see how drastic of a turn it takes. And if they're going to have to play this, you know, catch-up or shootout style, I think he fits that better. And the fact that McFadden only got one snap and he got 39, it's kind of telling.
You say I'm circling, but it's going to be hard to read week to week.
Yes, it's going to be hard to read. Yeah. He's asking for you to make a call.
I said Morris. You know, that's what
you
I said.
You circled before you said Morris. Yes.
Morris,
because you know
like
why?
Minutes.
Because this is because you guys say, okay, you want an answer, but this could be like Jerick McKinnon and Latavius Murray. It's going to depend on the game flow week to week. We thought McKinnon was like an every week guy. In two of the last 3 weeks, Latavius Murray's outscored him. If the Cowboys want to win, and I think they can establish the run, then it's going to be Morris. When they're playing from behind, it's going to be Rod Smith. So,
but if you're going to be taking a pick for one,
I already said Morris, but it's going to be a wild ride.
I understand it's going to be a while. I get it. There is no easy projection here, but we've been waiting and waiting and waiting for this exact moment, right, to get some example of what we're going to see with the Dallas Cowboys. Let's talk about Darren McFadden here, right? Like, people that thought that stashed Darren McFadden all year and stashed Darren McFadden and expected, like, listen, break in case the glass, you know, break, God forbid something happens to Ezekiel Elliott, then we bring in Darren McFadden. One snap. And I think we, the four of us, including Corey, kind of saw through this. That, like, listen, one guy's been active all year as a backup. One guy's been the special teamer in pass catching, you know, back. And one guy hasn't played all year. And, like, if we just use logic here, then you'll figure out Darren McFadden is third. And he is. He was on the field for one snap. So I think what is at least good here is that this isn't a three-man committee. This isn't a three-man question. This is Alfred Morris as the early down back. This is Rod Smith as the passing down back. And I know Matt, and you just said this, and I want to reiterate it. you always prefer the passing down back in the offense. That is your personality. That is how you build your teams. You always prefer the passing down back. Scotty, you have said, listen, I believe that Alfred Morris gives Dallas the best chance to beat Dallas to have Ezekiel Elliott, and that's why you prefer Alfred Morris. And I get it. I get both sides of it. And I totally agree with you, Scott, that depending on the game flow and the type of game, that's who's going to be the running back to own. But I think the answer is, for those that want to know, those are the two guys, depending on the game flow, that you're going to want to start. Both Alfred Morris and Rod Smith. I'll say this, Darren McFadden is dropping them. We'll be back right after this.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Fantasy Sports Radio Network. And there is no answer, truly, for the Cowboys. But that's okay, because, and I've said this many times, if you give me two guys, I can live with that. Mm-hmm. I can live with knowing there's two guys. That's why you want to talk about Minnesota. We'll do that in a moment. But I get it. It's Jerick McKinnon and Latavius Murray. There's two guys, and I'm not upset. In New Orleans, there's two guys. I'm not upset. In Dallas, there's two guys. And that's okay. There is space for Rod Smith and Alfred Morris.
If you're a Jerick McKinnon owner, though, can you realistically say that you're not upset? Because you there was a, you know, a thought process even entering this week that this guy was a set it and forget it top 10 fantasy running back, and Latavius Murray has now outscored him in two of the past 3 weeks.
Let's get to Minnesota in a little bit. I want to finish off with Dallas. I want to finish off with Dallas and Atlanta, because
I do want to get back to Minnesota.
We're gonna get back to Minnesota. We have the next 3 hours, and you and I the next five. So I promise you, we'll talk about Minnesota here. But I don't want to gloss over the rest of what happened here with Dallas and Atlanta. So, because Dak Prescott had no time to throw, that kind of, you know, hurt everybody else, right? Dennis Bryant got a full complement of snaps, I believe. He targeted more than anybody, 8 times, 4 for 39. Jason Witten, the leading receiver, he had 7 catches for 59 yards. He's ageless. Great. Let's go to the other side of the field. Because we all kind of, at least 3 out of the 4 of us, back in early September, we sat here and shrugged when Dr. Ray said, do not draft Devontae Freeman. Mm-hmm. I know you and I didn't move him down even one iota, Matt. We loved Devontae Freeman. It did not matter what Dr. Ray had said. He was concussed, but he was going to be fine for the regular season. And he had said, Dr. Ray had said, that he is more prone to another concussion. And I project he's going to get concussed later on this year. And he literally said to us, I don't know if it's going to be week 1, week 3, week 4, week 5, week 6, week 10, whatever. It's going to happen. He's going to be more susceptible. And you and I said, listen, anyone's susceptible. It's the NFL. Anyone can get a concussion. And through the first 9 weeks, Devontae Freeman had his struggles, but it wasn't due to being hurt. Yesterday, he left that game with another concussion, did Devontae Freeman. And after the game, Thomas Davis came out.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy.
And said, Devontae Freeman did not get concussed in week 10. He was concussed in week 9, and he played anyway, and played through it. And we knew it last week, he wasn't doing well. He should not have been out there on Sunday. Which means this has now lingered for a while. Freeman took another hit. This is not good for Devontae Freeman.
Oh, no, this is not good at all. That was the first thing I thought about when I heard he was coming off, he was concussed. I thought of exactly what Dr. Ray said. On the flip side, there's guys like Davante Adams who were concussed earlier this year, had a concussion previously, and stuff like that.
Came back in 10 days.
And he comes back like every week right after. But the thing here is, what Tommy Davis said is, I guess you have to protect the players from themselves.
Sure.
Because if you are an athlete at this level, look, all these players that are playing football, they know what's going on. They know about the CTE and this. But it's the love of the sport. It's everything. It's what you want to do. I mean, NASCAR guys know that they can crash into a wall and get killed going almost 200 miles an hour. But it's part of the game. No matter how much we want to protect players in football, you just can't. There's going to be plays, especially like passes or runs, where a guy's going to put his head down or something. And it's not even going to be an illegal hit, but you're going to get hits to the head.
Yeah, and to Matt's points, I remember Dr. A saying that for a running back, this was dangerous because he could lower his head at any time and suffer another concussion. And he could, with his history, he could be out several weeks this time. So he said that in the preseason. So I'm going to be very interested to hear what the diagnosis is and how many time he's going to miss. And for those of you who own Jay Ajayi, he said similar things about Jay Ajayi as well.
Yes, he did. Yeah. So I don't want to worry about that. Yeah, but yes, that's something you
have to just keep back in your mind.
I agree with that.
So, whenever somebody sends me a trade offer for Jay Ajayi, and ultimately if it's a very tight decision, I'm going to say, okay, the knees are concerned and the concussions are concerned. To what level do I want to take that on?
I would be buying him, though, right now. If somebody sent me a trade offer on this offense, this is exactly what the Eagles needed. And even we saw him in that limited...
Look good.
And he's got Dallas a couple more times.
I'd lean towards taking it, but it's not absolute. It depends on what I'm being asked to give up. And if somebody that could happen, somebody will say, okay, you have Kareem Hunt, I have Jay Ajayi, I'm sending you an offer, Ajayi for Hunt. That's one of the reasons I'm not doing it.
When Devontae Freeman left this game, it was Tevin Coleman that really took over. 20 carries, 83 yards, and a touchdown for Tevin Coleman. And listen, maybe Steve Sarkisian just doesn't know how to handle two running backs. But here it is, 20 carries for Coleman. Gets a touchdown, gets over 80 yards. A really good performance by Tevin Coleman. Teron Ward, again, a little bit of game flow here because of how much they were off and really all up all game was Atlanta. 9 carries, 23 yards for Teron Ward. He's the back of Devontae Freeman. A lot of people used to say Tevin Coleman is not the handcuff to Devontae Freeman. That's Teron Ward. We heard that a lot. But I think in Steve Sarkisian's offense, gentlemen, that's just not the case. I truly believe that he doesn't, I don't want to say know how, but it seems like he doesn't completely understand what you do when you have these two running backs. And once Freeman went out, it was a Tevin Coleman show.
Yeah, I would have taken the blueprint. What my expectations on this season was Sarkisian would make little adjustments, but he would pretty much follow this blueprint that was given from Sarkisian. Why wouldn't you when an offense performs so good? You put your own handprints on it here or there, and then maybe year two, you make a bigger move on it. So, look, they're 5-4, the Falcons. This is still a very talented team. They're still a very talented team. I mean, Matt Ryan threw he hit over 40,000 yards yesterday.
Yep.
And stuff. So, and the fact that they have a Tevin Coleman is quite the luxury. And I do feel bad for Freeman. I'm not trying to be heartless, but this is, this is sports. Freeman got hurt, so now it is a boom to Tevin Coleman. I would expect Freeman to be out for a while.
Yeah, it's to both Matt's and Dr. A's points, yes, Coleman will obviously be the lead dog there, though, but I figure Teron Ward will figure in for about 10 to 11 carries a game here. They don't want to overwork Coleman.
I agree with that. I think Teron Ward's the one you want to pick up this week. I think he's definitely going to be on the list. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Teron Ward is going to be mixed in. He'll have the Tevin Coleman role in the Tevin Coleman-Devontae Freeman combination. But ultimately, it's going to be Tevin Coleman's show, as I said, in Atlanta. Let's go to the wide receivers, because I think Mohamed Sanu had one of the more disappointing games of any wide receiver. A couple of guys really disappointed. Mohamed Sanu, one of them. 3 catches, 29 yards. Scott, this is kind of the guy that you thought you were talking about all year long against a burnable Dallas secondary. Maybe it's because the running game was effective, but on a day where Matt Ryan threw for 2 touchdowns, both Mohamed Sanu and Julio Jones combined for 0 of them.
Yeah, you never know where exactly he's going with the football when he's in the red zone. We saw Justin Hardy score a touchdown yesterday. We saw Taylor Gabriel get in the mix. We saw Marvin Hall a few weeks ago catch a touchdown pass. Austin Hooper get in the end zone. So Ryan likes to spread the ball around and hit everybody for touchdowns except for Julio.
One of the things I will continue to reiterate, the Falcons offense runs better when the tight end is involved. And we saw it yesterday with Hooper. So, look, I'm going to buy on this team going forward. It should be interesting. One of the things I will say is I kept looking at the Falcons preseason when I was drafting. And, you know, sometimes you look at weeks 14, 15, 16. And I was saying, wow, they have a pretty nice schedule.
Yeah.
They play the Saints twice. Now, just on the flip side, as a Ingram and Kamara owner, I'm like, wow, the Saints have a nice schedule at the end of the season. So just, you know, it's always funny that way.
Yeah, it just everything changes and constantly changes in fantasy football. As I said, the Mohamed Sanu stuff, very disappointing yesterday.
I mean, at some point, he's been very good, and you know, every week, you know, it's not going to happen. Sanu is not an elite talent. He's done very well for his owners, and of course, you're disappointed about yesterday, that matchup and stuff. One thing I didn't get from Dallas, and I thought maybe in the second half we'd see it, in that at the end of the first half, and then one of the last drives, Cole Beasley had the corner beat deep, yeah. And I figured Dallas would go to that in the second half and really try to exploit that, but they didn't.
Yeah, Beasley hasn't been a thing outside that two touchdown game at all. I don't think he's gone above 50 yards in any game this year. And as far as the Falcons go, there's really no upside from any of their pass catchers. Not even Julio Jones. It's like Sanu has played well enough to give you a pretty good floor and be pretty dependable. But there's, you know, the way Matt Ryan is, you know, he's from a fantasy perspective, he's just been ho hum this year. He's been a jag this year, and it's his receivers. They don't have any upside. We haven't seen a big game from an Atlanta receiver all year long.
Yeah, you know, Julio Jones didn't find the end zone again. But for someone that was concerned about his availability in this game, to see six catches, 57 yards, targeted eight times.
That's what you would have got if you expected him to play, probably.
Probably so, but yeah. I was happy he just played all game.
Yeah, he got 11 points.
I think every week he's mandatory. He must receive at least 12 targets. I don't understand that. That's just something
of course.
That has to happen.
Of course. And
the thing is there's like no blow-up games for him. And there's no touchdowns. And, of course, you're not going to bench him. You know, you strip the name off the back of a jersey, and there's still a pretty good floor there. If you did strip the name off the back of the jersey, you say, would I want to start this guy or Robert Woods if you strip the name off the back of the jersey or Adam Thielen? You know, at what point do we stop saying that Julio Jones, after 10 weeks, as much as I plug him in every week, is a must start? Because after 10 weeks, we have not seen a big Julio Jones performance, and we have one touchdown.
Yeah, well, hold on. I'm still not benching Julio Jones. To me, he is a must start. The minute the guy gets at least double digits, he's not delivered upon what your expectations as a top three wide receiver. But the season is not over. If you do make the playoffs and stuff, there's six more weeks to go, and this guy can win you a championship. I can't go that far. It's disappointing, yes, and he's always a person if you own Julio, you know this going into it, at least you should, that, you know, watching him play is never easy because he's always looking at an ankle, grabbing an ankle.
So, I also don't want to say there's been no blow-up game, Scott. He has the fifth most receiving yards in all of the NFL.
Right.
Fifth overall in the NFL. I mean, that's pretty damn impressive.
Let me ask you this, though.
Sure.
And I'm not saying I disagree with you guys, but throwing it out for debate. Right now, if you had a team with, say, for instance, Doug Baldwin, mm-hmm. Adam Thielen, Robert Woods, and Julio Jones, and you strip the name off the back of the jersey, can you realistically tell me he's an every week start? Just based on who he is and what the past performances have been?
You strip the name off the back of the jersey, obviously not. However, when Robert Woods doesn't play the Giants and the Texans, I'm interested to see what happens to Robert Woods, to be perfectly honest.
Right.
Take a break. We'll come back. Play with the Minnesota Vikings when we return. It's the Roto-X Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Playing daily fantasy basketball this year? Consider Daily Roto your go-to resource. Whether you play on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. With a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, there's no better place to get your NBA DFS content. Better yet, you can save 10% using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium and learn more about our awesome product.
We are back here, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Happy to be with you, the King, Wall Street. I'm Greg, and I watched a lot of the Minnesota-Washington game yesterday. Actually, it was that Buffalo Wild thing, so I was able to watch every game rather than just Red Zone. And I watched a lot of all these Washington games. I'm a big Kirk Cousins guy, as you know. So watching Minnesota. And that first half, man, Case Keenum just did anything he wanted to do. It was wild.
I mean, what do I always say? Competition. When you have somebody that's coming for your job, people seem to always step up in sports, real life, whatever it is. And is Case Keenum a great quarterback? No. But he's just got to be better than average, and, you know, he's got weapons there. As much as I love McKinnon, he really wasn't needed yesterday. And that's a credit to Case Keenum. He used, I mean, I didn't think that this was going to, they had, I mean, four touchdowns. He did end up the day with two interceptions, but 300 yards.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He was pretty much, he was on target all day.
I'll tell you this, as someone who was looking for a streaming quarterback when I lost Jameis Winston, I wanted Josh McCown. I didn't get him. I wanted Ryan Fitzpatrick. I wound up going with him. My other choice was Case Keenum. I went with Fitzpatrick over Case Keenum this week, and that was a massive disappointment.
Well, here's the thing, though, with Keenum and Fitzpatrick and, you know, and McCown and guys like that, they can have performances like that, but the bottom can drop out on them at any time. Now, with Keenum, Bridgewater suffered a major, devastating knee injury. It's not like every other knee injury that's out there. So they don't want to rush him back if they don't have to, if Keenum can hold down the fort like he did yesterday. Look, he played really, really well for a long stretch yesterday, but then he threw two bad interceptions yesterday. From a pure football perspective, that's why I believe the Vikings, I don't think they have a shot of winning the NFC Championship with him as the quarterback. But, you know, from a fantasy perspective, he's got weapons. He's got weapons. You could see more three touchdown, three interception, 300-yard games. And from a fantasy perspective, you can live with that. But Keenum is also a journeyman type. Look, he's doing what a backup quarterback is supposed to do. You give Jacoby Brissett and Case Keenum a lot of credit, because if you have a backup quarterback at the beginning of the year, that's what you want him to do. But, you know, easily next week, it could be no touchdowns and two interceptions and 150 yards.
See, I'm going to disagree here on the fact that it's not like there's another team in the NFC that's dominant this year. We don't have that dominant team.
I don't know if that's true. I don't know if that's true.
I don't think the Eagles are dominant.
Scott wouldn't say the Eagles. Scott has brought up multiple times that New Orleans is the most
dominant. I think the
teams.
Eagles are showing that they're about to get there. And the Saints, you know, they have a quarterback like Drew Brees. Case Keenum is the type of guy. You saw it yesterday, even when they were up. He can make that confounding play, big spot.
He can, but he also got them to that point. It wasn't the running game that was doing it. This is the Washington Redskins have a good secondary, and it's led by Josh Norman. And he used those pieces. When you have Dillon and Diggs on the field at the same time, that's a dynamic team. You have Rudolph, who really didn't get involved in the passing game. It was the backup tight end that got the wide open touchdown. I mean, that was a good call because that guy was wide open. But you have in the running game, you got a little thunder lightning there. This is a very good defense. It doesn't play out in fantasy terms like Jacksonville does with the points every single week. But I don't think the Saints are playing very well. They're 7-2. The defense looks really good. But I don't think they're an elite team. I really don't. I think they're very good. And I put them up there, them, the Eagles, and the Vikings as, in that threesome, But I think if Minnesota gets a hold, look, Minnesota, everybody keeps talking about Teddy Bridgewater. There's no way, unless Keenum fails, which is possible, he could go next week, and yes, he could have a terrible game. And then you can go to Teddy Bridgewater. But there's no way a 7-2 team with this defense and the way the team's playing right now, that the guys in that team want Bridgewater in there right now. Until Keenum fails, it's him.
Yeah, now, you say, you know, Saints are not an elite team, but this is a wide-open conference where there's not a dominant team. So I think they are elite. I think they're the most complete team in the conference because their defense is not quite as good as Minnesota, but they have a veteran, proven, battle-tested quarterback. I think their running backs are better. The wide receivers are better. I don't know, but
the wide receiver core is not better. They got Diggs and
Minnesota's wide receivers are better. Hold on. Well, Minnesota's wide receivers are better, but I think they have a more complete team. Now, I'm not taking credit away from Minnesota. I'm not saying that. They have a very good defense. They have good running backs, but I just don't think Case Keenum is the type of quarterback. He's built to be a backup. He's playing above his. He can play above his what's expected him at times. But you know, you saw two confounding interceptions late. You know, that's not a guy who you want with the game on the line in the playoffs. Quarterback is very important in the playoffs. The components you want are a good, savvy quarterback, a good running game, and a good defense. I think they have 2.5 of those pieces, and I think that's the difference between them, New Orleans, and Philadelphia, especially New Orleans, because, you know, they have Drew Brees and Case Keenum. Case Keenum may put up better numbers, but Drew Brees is a much better decision maker when it counts, and he's been there.
I don't think anyone's comparing Drew Brees and Case Keenum. I don't want to get into that.
I'm saying Case Keenum will be the reason why they won't win a conference championship.
They have that edge on there. I'm trying to say they get this home field advantage. They're going to be a tough team to beat. And look, they don't have to go throwing the ball. Look, they have the weapons, and I'm not saying Keenum's going to take them to the promise, but I'm not saying with Keenum they can't win.
Well, let's talk about, I think they can't.
Guys,
that's
let's
my
go
prediction.
Back. Let's go back to the fantasy perspective of this whole thing, and that is the fact. I don't remember if it was Matt or you, Scotty, that pointed out. All right, we love Stephon Diggs, we love Adam Thielen, we love Jerick McKinnon, we like Kyle Rudolph. If you like all these pieces, you have to like Case Keenum from a fantasy perspective. You have to.
He has
a reputation. In my dynasty league, where it's so hard to get a quarterback, like people are bidding $90, $100 for Tom Savage in a $1,000 budget, the guy was cut twice and picked up. I finally picked him up like 4 weeks ago, and now yesterday, like during the first half, I'm going, wow, if I would have started Keenum over Stafford, you know, but then, of course, Stafford ended up getting his points.
Stafford was
but
fine,
now
yeah.
I have my backup quarterback.
Yeah, it worked out really well, and a lot of that was thanks to Adam Thielen, who was just a monster all over the field. I know a lot of people within the industry thought he was going to have a big game in that slot for against Washington, rather, and it happened. I mean, he was just a monster. Every time he threw the ball, Thielen, he catches everything. I was watching, like I said, with my friends, and they're just like, he must have glue on those yellow gloves because he doesn't drop anything. 8 for 166 and a touchdown, 12 targets. He now has the most games with 150 receiving yards or more for any undrafted player in NFL history.
And at least 5 catches in every single game this
year. Only player in the NFL to do that.
Yes, and Washington, you could really burn them in the slot.
Yep.
You know, Baldwin did it the game before. You know, that's something to watch. You know, the Redskins have the good outside corners, but in the slot, you know, they can certainly be burned. And, you know, I'll have to review the numbers, but now I'm going to myself, you know, Thielen, the lack of touchdowns was what you didn't like, and now he's scored in 2 straight weeks. So, you know, you start that worry with him and both Robert Woods has started to go away because they didn't really score until last week. I'm saying to myself, do I want Thielen over Diggs the rest of the way? Because both these guys are explosive, and Thielen doesn't seem to be an injury risk.
Diggs is the injury risk. Diggs also went down on inside the 2. He almost had 2 touchdowns on the day. And, you know, it's great to see him back. And when you have both these guys on the field, it just makes it really tough for defenses. Look, I mean, you got Thielen in the slot, Diggs on the outside. Diggs, it just, when he's out there and healthy, this is a team that, in my opinion, can get to the Super Bowl. I've stuck on this team
all year.
And I'm not going away. When you have a defense like that, I just want to say I enjoy watching it. I would love to see Saints and Vikings. And let's see what the Eagles do. Look, they're 8-1. I'm not taking anything away from them. And we'll see coming off the bye. They got Dallas. I think, you know, the way things are lining up, it's looking pretty good.
Matt makes a lot of great points, but ultimately, I believe that the quarterback situation is going to be their undoing.
Yeah, I know. So we know we both obviously stand on this issue now. But you know what's interesting, Matt, in regards to Minnesota? And I have to ask this question. How much of a downgrade really is Case Keenum from Sam Bradford?
Looking at the past, maybe not so much, but I'm saying coming into this year, Bradford looked to be, you know, that one game, he looked really good.
Sure. Case Keenum here in this game looked really good.
I don't know. If Case Keenum can, you know, perform like this, like I said, this was on the road versus a good secondary.
Oh, yeah.
It's not just Seattle and Norman and nobody else there. So, you know, it was done, and he did throw the two picks late, but you know what? They always had pretty much a two-possession lead, or at least a, you know, touchdown plus a two-point conversion lead. The game was never in doubt. The Redskins scored late to kind of make it that one-possession game, but to me, they pretty much took control of this game a long time early on.
As Matt mentioned, Stephon Diggs, 4 catches, 78 yards, and a touchdown. Could have been another one. Got pulled down at the 2-yard line. Kyle Rudolph, 5 catches for 37 yards, and someone named David Morgan II had Kyle Rudolph.
Yeah, that was
touchdown.
Like a goal line touchdown. And to that question about Bradford versus Keenum, Bradford, just like Matt would always point out, has so much trouble staying healthy. But if Sam Bradford was healthy, I would have the Vikings as my NFC favorite. I just feel like
we got it. Case Keenum's not as good as Drew Brees.
I just want to say one thing. How about Maurice Harris with that catch to start that game?
How about that?
That was like the catch of the year.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying that. We're going to take a break. I want to come back. Scott, you brought up a lot of good points earlier when it came to Jerick McKinnon, how people wanted to lock him in as a top 10 running back going forward, set it and forget it type of guy, and now two in the last 3 weeks, it's been not even close to that. What can we project for Jerick McKinnon going forward? And the same question holds true for Latavius Murray. I think we have to discuss it, and we will when we come back here on the Roto Experts.
If you're playing daily fantasy basketball on DraftKings or FanDuel this NBA season, you need to sign up for Daily Roto. Built by a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. Better yet, you can save 10% off using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium to learn more about their product.
Matt has said, and we did this last week, you talk either or, there are very few players that Matt wouldn't have selected Jerick McKinnon for. He loved them going forward and thought we were in store for a pretty big game yesterday. It didn't happen. McKinnon, 10 carries, 32 yards, catching just two balls for 15. Latavius Murray, on the other hand, had 7 more carries, 68 yards, so he more than doubled McKinnon in yards and scored the touchdowns. Latavius Murray averaged 4 yards a pop. Jerick McKinnon, just 3.2. How nervous does that make you?
It doesn't really make me that nervous. If you still haven't hit your trade deadline and somebody wants to get rid of McKinnon, I'm buying. I mean, look at LeSean McCoy's last 2 weeks. 2.5, 9 points in a PPR. So, look, running backs are going to have these kind of weeks. I mean, I think Jordan Howard had, 54 yards rushing yesterday. So we want to look at these guys that went early. I think McKinnon in a PPR format is a guy you want, and I'd gladly be buying right now.
The thing with McCoy, though, and Howard, you know, those are the only guys there. And, you know, depending on the game flow here or how they're going to be used. Let me finish. Hold on. you get very passionate when we talk about the Minnesota Vikings. Mm-hmm. But, you know, look, Murray has outscored him 2 in the last 3 weeks. Depending on situation, scheme, and, you know, how they draw it up offensively, sometimes it could be Murray and sometimes it could be McKinnon. Look, I like the upside of McKinnon in any given week here and there. But, you know, I'm starting to think, you know, do I really want this guy as an RB1? He could put up RB1 numbers in any given week, but Murray's healthy now, and I don't think you can write that off because he's going to be the goal line back, not McKinnon.
when the ball's on the 1 year, it's going to go to Murray. And we saw that when Diggs was tackled on the 2 or 1 yard line.
Yep.
Look, I mean, look at Jordan Howard. He's got 4 weeks of under 10 points this season. He has 1 week of over 20 points this season. So I want to dispel this rumor about the guy who's there by himself. It's and if you play, especially if you play in a PPR format and stuff like that, it's a new NFL. Two running backs can coexist if there's enough work going there. And we see that in certain situations. So I'm not bailing on Jerick McKinnon because he didn't. Look, in his five games, he's got over at least 25 points in 3 of the 5. That's pretty damn good. I mean, I'm not running away from this. There's a lot of talent on this offense, and it just didn't work out this week to be his game. They didn't need it to be. You had Diggs and Thielen running wild. So, hey, that's going to happen. So I just want to point that out. I want to dispel that myth that, you know, you have that one guy. I mean, Jordan Howard, if he doesn't score a touchdown, he's probably getting single digits.
I don't think it's a myth that there's one guy. I think it depends on the team. Jordan Howard, whether he's underperforming or not, he's the guy. In Los Angeles, you know, either Los Angeles, like I'm not talking about the Chargers, I'm talking about the Rams. You know, nobody's usurping Todd Gurley. Nobody's usurping Kareem Hunt. Hold on.
You're talking about the elite of the elite, of course. There's like, you know, maybe a
right, but what I'm saying is, to your point, though, you know, it's not a myth. You know, it really depends on the team. Look at the Saints. As good as Mark Ingram is, and he ran incredible yesterday, Kamara's good too. So I think it depends on the team. Now, to your point, I agree with you. I'm certainly not bailing on Jerick McKinnon. But what I'm saying is, with Latavius Murray around, there is a danger that in any given week that he could outperform. Now, if I had to pick one of the two, I'm picking McKinnon. You know, if I would say for every 4 games, I would expect going forward, if you had to give me 4-game samples, I would expect McKinnon to be better running back in the 3. But to say think that it's a myth or there was a rumor because it's a one guy,
okay.
I think it depends on the team.
There's 32 teams in the NFL. There's maybe a handful of guys that have that backfield, like Elliott, Bell, Gurley, Hunt. You know, there's maybe a handful of guys that every single week you can count on to be elite studs. And if you put Jordan Howard's last 5 games against Jerick McKinnon's last 5 games, I'm pretty confident Jerick McKinnon's numbers are still going to come up on top. And you can put him against the
I don't think
boys.
You're just talking about the elite because there's names like Crowell and Abdullah, too. Those are the guys that really dominate the backfield.
Jerick McKinnon yesterday had one more snap than Latavius Murray. That was interesting. Take a break. We'll come back. I want to talk about the Washington Redskins as we begin hour number 2 next on Fantasy Sports Radio Network.